Welcome back to the Big Three, everybody. We've got a very special episode for you today, a conversation with NASCAR Cup Series driver Ricky Stenhouse Jr. Ricky, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, we are too.
I love just, you know, just chilling and being able to just kind of conversate and
Heck yeah.
Tell people my story, which is always cool.
We're not going to like surprise you with any gotcha moments or any
that's stuff what we're
like
here
that.
To do. Yeah. Conversate.
Yeah.
We are out here at the streets of Willow. This episode will be out after the video has come out, but we built a IROC Z Camaro with the help of NOS Energy and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. here.
I was overseeing.
Yeah, overseeing. Yeah, we had a little
contractor
FaceTime call. That was pretty fun. And then we haven't shot this yet, but you'll be out testing the car. I'm pretty stoked to get your impressions on it. Do you want to give a little background, maybe like why we chose the IROC Z Camaro in the first place to build and the significance of the model year that we chose?
Well, so, you know, obviously, you know, the IROC Z's needed a little power and, you know, everything that we do with NOS Energy Drink is bringing power to the racetrack. And so, you know, I think for us, it's going to be perfect little piece for hopefully you know somebody to get lucky enough to win this thing. So I'm excited to get behind the wheel and check it out as well. And you know, I still haven't seen it.
That's right.
You know, I've only seen it in the build process when I was, you know, kind of overseeing y'all's progress there. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. It looks really amazing. We chose some really cool parts for it. And as Ricky mentioned, you guys will have the chance to win it. We'll talk a little bit more about that later on. But first, let's get to know Ricky Stenhouse Jr. Can you tell us how you dipped your feet into racing, the start of your racing career?
Yeah, I didn't dip my feet in. I was just born right into it.
Oh,
so
really?
I grew up in Olive Branch, Mississippi, right south of Memphis. My dad raced dirt cars, you know, ever since I was born. So my parents got married at noon on a Saturday. My dad raced sprint cars that night.
Yeah.
And then I was born at noon on a Friday and my dad raced that night.
Oh my God.
So my mom took me to the dirt track when I was 6 weeks old. And I've been going to a racetrack ever since for, I would say on average, at least, you know, 42-ish weekends a year. Jeez. So, that's all I've ever known. And, you know, I started racing BMX bicycles at 3.
Wow.
Got my first dirt bike at 4 and started racing go-karts at 5.
That's awesome. You did karting for a while and then got into dirt oval after that.
Yeah. So the go-karts that I ran were not like most people, when they say, man, I grew up in karting, they think of like, you know, road course, you know, go-karting and stuff that they do like kind of overseas. And they do a lot of that here in the States as well now. But now that I'm, you know, in the Cup Series, I wish I would have done a little bit more of that because we do have a decent amount of road courses that we run. But no, mine was all dirt oval go-karts.
Mm-hmm. And that's cool.
I did that till I was 15. I wanted to like transition to like a micro sprint. But my dad was like, man, I can't spend the money to do that for a year or two. I'll just wait till you're 15 and then you can run sprint cars. So
those carts are really fun. I went to a race out at Paris, which is a couple hours from here. They have like a flat track and I got to try out, it was like a 2-stroke Rotax cart.
Yeah.
So much fun. They had like an outlaw, what is it called? Outlaw cart as well, which is
the winged
cart.
Yeah.
Super cool.
That's a, you know, that was a big out here in California and it's kind of worked its way, to the East Coast. We have some races there locally in North Carolina and, those look really cool. I didn't grow up, you know, doing those either. Mine were kind of the flat carts, Briggs and Stratton, engines on them. And, you know, so that's where I really learned. My dad built engines for a living. So I grew up in the engine shop, you know, tearing down engines, washing parts, working on my go-karts and dirt bikes and things like that. So working on my dad's sprint car. He actually raced sprint cars up until I started. He basically let me do a test day and he never got back in the car. So he still hasn't been back in the car since.
Did you grow up close to Talladega? Was that like your home
NASCAR? That would have been, our home NASCAR track. Now, I didn't go to many NASCAR races. My first ever cup race I went to was in 1992. I was born in 87, and it was the Coke 600 in Charlotte. And, you know, that's our longest race of the year for NASCAR. And it was where I made my Cup debut in 2011. So a really cool significance of that race. And like I said, it's the longest race of the year. And I got pictures of me falling asleep in the grandstands. And then, you know, so, yeah, it's wild that that was where I made my Cup debut. But that would say, for me, that was the racetrack that I went to, you know, when I go see my grandparents in North Carolina.
That's cool.
How did you make the jump from sprint? Was it straight from sprint cars to asphalt oval or like Xfinity series or anything like that? Like, yeah. What was that journey
like? So, like, the timeline was, so I graduated high school in 2006 and I was racing, you know, wing sprint cars. And then my dad basically was like, hey, I'll give you kind of like a college. I'll give you 4 years of, you know, me helping you race and we'll just kind of see where it goes. And we were kind of on that like 4.5 years starting, you know, the 2007 season. And so we weren't sure how much we were going to race, you know, throughout 2007. And we went out to Arizona and they had this big USAC race called the Copper on Dirt in Manzanita Speedway. And we won the sprint car race and the Silver Crown race in the same night. You know, Tony Stewart had his sprint car team there. Casey Kane had his. You know, it was a big deal. And then one of Tony Stewart's guys broke his leg on a dirt bike. So they called me to fill in for him.
Oh, wow.
And so I ran 2007. I moved to Indianapolis. And then at the October of 2007 is when I signed my deal with Roush Fenway to go ARCA racing.
Okay.
And then so that was when I transitioned over to stock cars. So I ran about 4.5 years of sprint cars, moved to North Carolina after Indianapolis and started racing the ARCA series, did that for a year, transitioned into the Nationwide series back in 2009 or in 7 Nationwide races, and then started full-time in 2010.
That's awesome. That happened so quick then.
So fast.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, you know, like I tell people, like February of 2007, I wasn't sure exactly what we were going to do racing-wise. And then, you know, I ended up moving to Indianapolis, signing, and I was testing stock cars in October and November of 2007. And then I raced Daytona ARCA race in February of 2008.
Wow.
So it was really crazy kind of how it all came together so fast.
Yeah. So going from dirt sprint cars to NASCAR oval racing, was there any skill that translated really well, or did you have to kind of start from scratch?
Yes and no. You know, I think, you know, with the sprint cars, you're sideways all the time. And, you know, but the point
like,
is not to be sideways. I mean, like we run sideways, but just like any car, like the more sideways you are, the less you're driving forward.
Sure.
Right. So you want to be in a straight line as much as possible. But you still have to get our cars to turn around the corner. So, you know, I don't race my Nelson Energy Drink sprint car near as much as I used to, obviously, back in the day. But, you know, when I get in it, you know, there's a lot of times that I got to remind myself, like, you know, yeah, it's cool to be sideways, but like you want to be pretty straight and driving forward. So, you know, I would say the crossover is dirt racing. You're always searching for different lines. And I think that has helped in stock cars where, you know, a lot of people that, you know, grew up racing stock cars, it's like, hey, I run the bottom of the racetrack or I run the top of the racetrack. Like I'm supposed to run those areas. And then nobody really searches around for, you know, different lines.
Right.
You know, sprint car racing, you could run 2 laps in the same line and then all of a sudden it's worn out in that area and now you're searching again. And so.
Oh, so it's more dependent on like the track.
And yeah. So the dirt changes a lot. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, you could run the first 10 laps of the race on the bottom of the racetrack. And then all of a sudden that gets really slick. It'll get as slick as this floor in here. And then, so then you start moving around and you might move to the top of the racetrack. You might enter on the top and, you know, kind of drive off on the bottom. You know, the car control, I would say, you know, the feel of being comfortable sideways helped in the stock car. I mean, if you get the stock car too sideways, there's sometimes just no coming back. Like you're spun out and in the fence. And I would say early on, maybe I pressed my luck a little too much of letting it hang out and, you know, getting in trouble. But yeah, there's a fine line and just being comfortable with the car getting loose and being able to correct it, you know, while still keeping your speed up. So I would say that translates and crosses over.
Yeah. I was imagining like, in sprint cars, you're kind of always a little out of control, right?
Yes, you know, like I would say most of the time. Yeah, I mean, you're on the verge of out of control, but like, you know, just right on online. I mean, you can't sprint car racing. You can't be conservative and win these races.
Yeah, you have to take chances.
We have our NOS Energy Drink sprint car team that runs in the World of Outlaws series, and you know, Sheldon Hodenschild. He's, you know, one of those guys that, you know, lives on the edge. He grew up riding dirt bikes and, you know, race motocross, and you know, he knows exactly, you know, how to put it right on the edge of out of control. Sometimes he crosses that line, but there, everybody that's, you know, winning these races and in sprint cars nowadays, they're really aggressive, and you have to be.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's cool about watching them is, like, you know, a guy, you know, you'll have maybe two cars at the front of the pack from most of the race, but then, you know, they'll get in a little tussle. And then, you know, at that split second where you see one of the cars start to maybe like lose control a little bit, guy in third or fourth will just be
charging
past them. Yeah. It's so cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, you can in a sprint car race, you can go from, you know, fifth or sixth to the win in like five laps, depending on, you know, how things play out. And, you know, especially when, you know, two cars are trying to fight for the same real estate, like the same line. And then all of a sudden, like if you're in third or fourth and that's a different line than what your car is kind of set up to do, you know, it leaves a whole lane open for you. And I just, you know, it's cool. That's what I love about sprint car racing is it's never over till it's over. And, you know, so for me, that's what, you know, excites me about watching sprint car racing.
That's awesome. Going back to NASCAR, you won your first race when you were like 21 years old,
yeah.
Right? How did it feel to be so young in a pack of...
Yeah, so 2008, you know, it was... Stock car racing didn't, I wouldn't say just came like super easy. Like we did a lot of testing. And then, yeah, in 2008, you know, I mean, I'm used to like quarter mile dirt track races. And then all of a sudden we're racing, you know, mile and a half racetracks and 2 mile, 2.5 mile Daytonas and Talladegas. You know, we were in Kentucky and, you know, I'd finished second a couple races before that. And there were some guys in that was the ARCA series at the time. And, you know, at that time there was a ton of really good teams and drivers. Some had been there for a long time. And then, you know, a lot were, you know, kind of newer guys like myself. Like it was a good feeder series, you know, before you went to the, now it's the Xfinity series, but, you know, so we went there and it was cool. I had my whole family in victory lane and, you know, finally felt like, okay, now I figured out how to win in a stock car and go fast for, you know, for a longer race, you know, cause our sprint car races are, you know, 25, 30 laps. And then all of a sudden you're going to these stock car races that are, you know, 100, 150 yeah. laps, you know, at that time, different strategies, you had pit stops, you could work on your car and, you know, and then the aerodynamics of the cars, you know, were a lot different then. And so, yeah, no, it felt really good to finally get that first win. You know, I felt like we were always one of the fastest, you know, right when I got in the car, but like it was putting a full race together. What was, you know, kind of the struggle for me.
Was there one single thing that clicked in your head where you're like, oh, now I get it, that really translated to the win?
Yeah. And it still does to this day in stock car racing. I feel like is, you know, like I mentioned sprint car racing, you're on the edge of out of control the whole time and you're pushing the car to the limit. And I think when in stock cars, I finally figured out like, you got to drive it just under the limit, you know, because if you step over it, sometimes it's, like I said, it's too hard to catch it, you know, every single time. So if you could drive it just under the limit, get your car handling the way you wanted it to handle, which I think, you know, over the course of the season, we finally figured that out. And I knew exactly what I was looking for in a stock car. You know, it took me a while to kind of figure out what I was looking for in the car. Sure. To be fast underneath that limit.
Yeah. I want to zoom out a little bit, rewind, something I meant to ask earlier, but what was your first car?
My first car, I had a 94 Chevrolet extended cab, four-wheel drive.
Oh, nice.
That's okay. And growing up in Mississippi, that's all anybody ever wanted. Yeah. So, you know, so I got one and, you know, I think the primer was bad on that year. And so, you know, the paint was coming off of it and had to get it repainted, but it had, it had like 180,000 miles on it maybe when I got it. And yeah, so it was cool.
Did you lift it or anything like that?
No, I didn't. You know, every ounce of money that we had, it went to sprint car racing. Gotcha. for me. You know, I wanted to put, you know, some BF Good wrenches on it. And, you know, I think a friend of ours gave me a toolbox for the back. So that was
nice.
Cool.
Nice.
But yeah, no, that was it. And my parents, instead of going on a honeymoon, they bought an 85 SS Monte Carlo. And so my dad talked my mom into that. We still have it. And he said that's, so he always knew what year they got married. So I always that's thought it was funny. Cool to go. You know, my dad, he had Trans Ams and everything growing up, you know, in his, you know, 20s. And, you know, I felt like he was drifting before drifting was a thing. And so he would do that with me in the Monte Carlo a lot.
Oh, that's
and,
fun.
You know, it was always fun to ride in that.
That's yeah, cool. That's really fun.
We'll be right back after these messages. Now back to the show.
I want to kind of talk about like a race day. Just all that goes into that. Do you have, before you even get in the car, do you have like a playlist or like hype up music that you listen to before you get in the car? You just
no. So, and a lot of athletes, you know, when they come and see our sport, they're always kind of, you know, shocked when they see like our schedule. You know, like I'll show them my schedule, like on my phone. I'm like, this is everything I got to do today.
It's just packed.
And, you know, it's packed right up until the time of, you know, of the race. And so whether it be, you know, appearances for NASCAR or the track or, you know, your sponsors that are there that weekend, you know, meet and greets, driver's meeting, team meeting, you know, we're pretty much wide open. I have about, I would say like 15-minute window of, you know, from the team meeting, you know, I'm changing, getting in my suit, you know, headed to the driver's meeting. And then after the driver's meeting, we do intros. Mm-hmm. And then
that's right. Yeah.
We got the prayer national anthem. And then you have like a 3-minute window to get in the car. And mm-hmm. like, that's when you, I guess, kind of turn your game face on is like, you know, once the national anthem's over and it's time to get in the race car. So, you know, a lot of the athletes are like, man, I can't believe you don't have a few hours to like, you know, sit and like chill and get ready. Right. And, yeah, it's like our sport's just totally different. And it's been like that ever since, you know, growing up, you know, you racing, you know, the dirt tracks, like, you know, you hot lapped and you run your heat races and then you know, you run your sprint cars. And for me, I was working on my cars, you know, with my dad. And so you would work on them and then just all of a sudden, you know, grab your helmet, jump in and go. And so, yeah, I would like time to chill out, but yeah, no. But my playlist would change a lot. It depends on what kind of mood I'm in.
And you've been doing that for almost 20 years now. Just like, no.
Yeah.
Do you have any like me time?
You know, during the week, you know, generally Mondays are kind of a off day for most drivers. You know, I'll get a workout in, but really kind of chill at home, not have a whole lot on the agenda. And then things kind of start picking up Tuesday, Wednesday. Like we have team meetings at the shop. You know, my workouts get a little bit more intense Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then Fridays are generally our travel day. So Mondays are, yeah, chill days. Thursdays, you know, might sneak in a round of golf or something. And then, you know, we travel on Friday and, you know, we're in the car Saturday and Sunday every week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you are a golf fan?
Yeah, I enjoy golf.
Nice. I also read that you did American Ninja Warrior.
Oh yeah.
How did you feel like? Did you train for that?
Or? No, I did not. you know, so the way that came about is I was a fan of the show and I watched it and I was like, man, I feel like I could do that. And so like I talked to NASCAR about it and I was like, put kind of a request in, like, hey, I'd like to give this a shot.
Yeah.
Well, then it wasn't until like 3 or 4 years later that they were like, hey, do you want to do it? You know, I think maybe once it got bigger, they, you know, made the ask or whatever.
Yeah.
By then, the course got harder and harder.
Yeah.
You know, because people were training for it.
Yeah.
And I just was like, yeah, sure, let's do it. And the first time I did it was in Indianapolis. Didn't go over real well. The second time I did it was right after our first win at Talladega.
Oh, nice.
They thought I was going to cancel because it was the week before we won Talladega. And then actually Blaney and I flew up to Cleveland and did it. And man, the water was so cold when you fell really? In. Yeah. Yeah, I made it like on like the fifth obstacle, I think Cool. And then I fell in and man, I thought I was going to walk on water. It was so cold.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, at a certain point, it got to be just obstacles where you're like hanging on by your fingernails.
Yeah, like
it's like, who can do that?
Climbers, right? Yeah. And you know, when I first started, it was like more of like an obstacle course.
Yeah, like a rope swing or something. Yeah,
agility stuff. Yeah. And then it turned into, you know, a lot of grip strength, which I got decent grip strength, I feel like, just from racing. But like at the same time, there's a lot of strength that goes into like the things that they do. So it's super impressive watching them now.
Did I read this right? Are you an Ole Miss fan?
I am.
All right. Well, I have a question for you then. It's a A or B. Who do you like better, AJ Brown or DK Metcalf?
Ooh. I feel like at Ole Miss, AJ Brown was probably kind of the star, but like I feel like DK Metcalf has kind of taken over that, I feel like, in the NFL a little bit.
Yeah, I feel like it took him a second to like get into his body, but now he's like a monster.
Dude, he's a monster. man. So I don't really have an NFL team. And so I kind of cheat the system. I just kind of pull for wherever the Ole Miss guys go. So you end up pulling for just about every team eventually. But I don't know. I'm definitely a big fan of both. I would say probably DK.
Yeah, that's a good choice. Do you make it back to the Egg Bowl once in a while?
Went to the Egg Bowl last year. Ole Miss has been obviously pretty solid for the last few years. And it was cool to go to the Egg Bowl. And, Mississippi State always plays Ole Miss tough, no matter, you know, how good they are that year. It seems like it's always within a touchdown. And it was touch and go there for a minute this year.
Are there any sports that you follow like that closely?
I wouldn't say like super close. I mean, I'm pretty much, you know, my wife thinks I'm like Sports Center sometimes because like I pay attention to all the sports to know a decent amount of, you know, whether it be basketball, baseball, football, golf, bowling, whatever. I'm a fan of any sport. I mean, most race car drivers are just like any other athlete. You're just so competitive and no matter what you do. And so I still enjoy playing basketball, pickleball, you know, golfing. You know, we get pretty intense when it comes to, playing against each other.
Pickleball can get heated.
It does.
It's crazy. Because it's
especially
like
when you just drill your, you know, the other person on the other side. And if they're not ready for it, you know, obviously you get a point. So, it gets heated.
All right. Going back to NASCAR, no more pickleball talk.
For now.
Yeah. You raced Mexico City. Carson ran into you again.
Again.
If you guys don't know, Carson Hocevar.
Yep.
Ran into Ricky in Nashville, and then 2 weeks later also spun him out in Mexico City in like the stadium turn, one of the most iconic and most visible turns, in what seemed like a very avoidable collision. Like,
agreed.
And you had some choice words for him after the race. Did you get to talk to him when the cameras were off?
No, going back to the first time, we had our NOS Energy drink car at Nashville, and you know, I was really bummed. We had a great season going up, you know, to that point, finishing really well, finishing every race, and it was early in the race, and we got crashed out there. So I was bummed for that. And then had an okay race at Michigan the next week, and then so 2 out of 3 weeks he's gotten me. You know, the frustrating part about Mexico City was, you know, our car was really good on the long run. And I think we were 23rd at the time, but like there was a lot of cars coming back to us. And I was, you know, we still had, you know, 15 or so laps left. And I felt like, you know, probably 17th, 18th position maybe was on the table for us to finish instead of 27th where we ended up finishing. And he was a lap down. So he wasn't like racing us at all.
Right.
Which, you know, we had a talk after Nashville and he was like, you know, all good. We talked it over, smooth things over. He's like, hey, I'm going to race you differently, which at Mexico City, he did. He waved me by and let me go. And then, you know, a few laps later crashed me. So I don't know if that was strategic. I have not talked to him. You know, this is obviously the week right after Mexico City. So we'll see. I'll give you an update on that. But yeah, I had some choice words for him. I didn't talk to him after the race was, you know, fully over. And, you know, I just went back to the hotel and took my guys to dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By nature, I mean, the nature of the sport, especially stock car, like oval racing, there's a lot of contact. There's going to be times when you get, you know, you get into each other, spin each other out, have crashes and stuff. Is there an understanding in the paddock that, like, you know, if you spin me out, I'm going to get you back later. Like, that is that part of the culture? Like, is there an unwritten rule that's going to happen?
Yes and no. I mean, you know, in the Mexico City race, the six spun me out, and I was on the wrong end of a lot of it in Mexico City. But like, for me, I don't really want to just go, you know, spin somebody out on purpose. I think it looks bad, especially when, you know, that was the intent. You know, there's a lot of times that, you know how to move somebody without, you know, fully spinning them out. And so, like, you know, the six spun me out. I got back to them, and I wasn't going to spin them out, but I raced them really hard. And we kind of, you know, doored each other a little bit, got aggressive. And then I pushed him hard enough that he missed turn seven. So he had to do a stop and go penalty. Oh. So, you know, I got my point across. Everything worked out without crashing them. And, you know, I think in our sport, most of the time, you generally, if there's an issue, and especially if somebody does something on, you know, total accident, you know, they're generally pretty apologetic. And, you know, it's like, we all make mistakes. It's just when those mistakes happen over and over again, you know, do people get frustrated? Like, you know, if you're playing baseball and the same pitcher hits you with a pitch, you know, every other game, right?
Like,
you
know, it's like,
you know, then it's like, all right. Yeah, I might charge the mound at some point, right? So, you know, there's a breaking point for sure. But yeah, no, it's a contact sport, and we push each other, especially now because the series, NASCAR is in a state where we're all really, really close in speed. You know, back when I first started in NASCAR, like, you know, first could be 0.3 faster than 10th. Well, now, like, you go to qualifying and 0.3, you could be 30th, you know, because the speed is so close. And so it makes it harder to pass. And then, so when it makes it harder to pass, you kind of got to, you know, push the issue a little bit more than you used to. And our cars can handle the bumping a little bit better. Our fenders are not metal anymore. They're composite. And so, you know, back when I first started, if you hit somebody, it ruined your car because it would bend your metal fenders, you know? And so
cut your tires,
aerodynamics are screwed. And so now you can get away with a little bit more. And I think that's another reason why the intensity level and kind of beating and banging's ramped up a little bit.
That makes total sense. Yeah.
Maybe you guys should go just full bumper car.
Like a little roll donut
on the outside.
Yeah. That would be nice. I mean, most of the time, like if you have issues, it is, you know, if your wheels get hit, we have our toe links that kind of hold everything in place. They get bent really easy. And they did that because they didn't want to, you know, us to like kill our whole suspension. Like it's easy to change a toe link, but it takes a while. So you end up losing a couple laps.
Speaking of altercations, last year at the All-Star race, you kind of got into it with Kyle Busch.
Yeah.
How does it feel to do something to Kyle that so many people have wanted to do?
That was probably the most, the most replies that I got. And I still get, you know, when we're doing autograph sessions, you know, out at the racetracks is, man, I'm so glad you did that. I want to shake your right hand, like all this stuff. But Kyle and I are, you know, we got a lot of respect for each other. And, you know, we've talked about that incident, you know, since, and, you know, he knows he crashed me on purpose. So he kind of knew it was warranted, you know, but maybe didn't think it was actually going to happen, which I wasn't sure it was going to either. I don't, you know, I would rather be, you know, doing interviews and things like that for winning races, not for getting an altercation. But, you know, it's always been part of our sport. And, you know, it doesn't happen all the time, but, you know, it definitely has happened through the course of the years of NASCAR. So, you know, like it's part of it.
It's maybe not the thing you want to do all the time, like fighting people. But I think getting to see those like real human heated moments is like what makes people become fans of drivers, you know, like seeing the personality like that, the tempers and
Like we're all passionate, right? And then, you know, for us in our sport, most of the time, you know, we got our helmet on, we're strapped in the car. And so there's a lot of times that I feel like fans don't get to see the passion that we have for sport and for our series and what we're doing. You know, it's our living as well. Right. You know, so, you know, other sports, you can see that, you know, play after play, you can't see exactly what we're thinking, or we can't show our emotions, you know, lap after lap from behind the helmet. You can listen to our radios, and there's some people that get more animated than others. But yeah, I mean, sometimes it bowls over to outside the car and gets a little aggressive. But like I said, I think, you know, for me, I think it's good. Like you said, not all the time, but it's good to have it happen every now and
then. Absolutely. That's why people love when the bench is clear in baseball or, you
doesn't
know,
happen
hockey.
All the time, you know, but I mean, hockey, obviously it happens a lot, but, you know, but like, yeah, it's like, I feel like it's like a, almost like baseball. Like it's like, when it happens, it's generally kind of big, you know, and people talk about it for a little while, but then, you know, it could not happen for a very long time.
We'll be right back after these messages. Now back to the show.
Are there any superstitions that you have before races? Are you a superstitious person?
No, I feel like there are drivers that are, you know, it's like, oh, I got to put, you know, my gloves on the right way. You know, I don't know which glove I put on first, whichever one I grab. You know, because I don't like to get in a routine, because like I mentioned earlier, like our schedules can change so much. I can have five things to do. I can have two things to do before the race. You know, generally I would say, you know, after driver's meeting, it's generally the same, but no, I'm not superstitious. I just roll with it. Cause you know, like, I guess superstition would be like having a routine, like before the race, like I have to have this routine.
Yeah, because then you'd have
or
that
it's going to go bad,
at
right?
At the back of your head, like, oh, I put my left glove on first. This
yeah, and so
last
I don't want to
crash.
Yeah, I don't want to have a routine and mess up the routine, and then like think it's, you know, my day's done.
Yeah, so if you don't have time to do whatever your ritual is or something.
Yeah, and then like, you know, there's so many factors that change, like, you know, weather can change it.
Yeah,
and, you know, so yeah, I just roll with it.
Did you get to do the Bristol dirt race with the next gen car? How was that from a sprint car perspective? I remember one year I watched it as a constant, like it was a lot of spins and crashes.
Yeah.
And maybe the first year.
The first year. Yeah. I actually enjoyed the first year. And maybe the last year, the second year, I think it rained a lot the second year.
I think so.
But I think the race was good. We just weren't as great the second year. But everybody assumed that, you know, the sprint car, the dirt guys were going to love Bristol dirt. The problem with Bristol dirt was all the sprint car and dirt track guys liked the concrete Bristol. Like, that's one of our favorite racetracks. So now you just took that away and made it a dirt race. And we like dirt racing.
Yeah.
You know, I like being in my sprint car. I don't like taking my stock car and running it on dirt, you know, because, you know, the lap times are just really slow. But the first year when it was rough, it made for a really fun track, because like it was dusty, it was slick. If your car handled good, you could kind of run through the bumps. And, you know, we finished second that first year. And, I was kind of bummed because we were having issues keeping our tires on the car. Like we were burning them off and they were blowing.
Just like so spinning the wheels all the way down.
Yeah. Then they shortened the last run, but we were really good at conserving our tires. And I think from the dirt background of, you know, having those races and knowing how to do that. So if it would have gone the full length on that last run, I think we win no problem. But, So I would like them to put dirt on like Martinsville or something, because that's like one of my least favorite racetracks. I'm glad they gave us back the normal Bristol. You know, so I'm looking forward to, we have a that'll be our next NOS Energy Drink race is the Bristol night race, which is really cool.
Nice. What's in your garage right now?
I just got my new 2500 Chevy.
Okay, nice.
That's my daily driver. Mm. But then, like, when I first got in the sport, I was with, you know, Roush Fenway Racing, which is, you know, obviously a major Ford team. So I got, for winning Rookie of the Year in 2010, Jack Roush gave me a Roush Mach 2.
Oh, that's fun. Cool.
So I have it in the garage. 2011, Ford gave me a Shelby GT500 for winning the Nationwide Series Championship. And then they didn't give me another one for 2012. I'm kind of bummed about that. But then I got a 26 Model T.
Wow. Whoa.
Okay.
Yeah. I got a 31 Hudson.
Wow.
Which is really cool.
How'd you get that? Was that like in the family?
So I was looking for a Model T, and just because I thought they were cool to have. Just super old, right?
Yeah.
And so the guy I went and bought it from, he was getting older, and he used to take it, his grandkids were massive Cars fans.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so
okay.
he had the Hudson.
Yeah.
And so he would take his kids around. Well, he was getting older, and he's like, man, I don't feel comfortable driving them around in these cars. I mean, they're a handful. And so he's like, I'll make you a deal to buy both. I really want these cars to stay together. Wow. So
that's cool.
Yeah, that's how I ended up with them. And then I got a 78 Ford crew cab.
Nice.
Which is nice.
A crew cab.
Yeah. It looks good.
Those are hard to come by.
They are.
That era. Wow. Yeah. That's cool.
And then I got a 2017 GT.
Nice.
Oh, nice. Oh,
okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've so only mostly Ford.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
He's a Ford guy.
And then when my parents move over, I'll add to the garage the 85 SS Monte Carlo.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah.
I'm glad he hadn't sold that yet.
Isn't the Model T is kind of weird to drive, right? Like there's some weird clutch stuff.
Yeah. Or, like you got to run the levers. You know, kind of like, the throttle is, it's just really odd.
You like adjust the timing while you drive it, right?
Well,
yeah, that's crazy. Yeah.
The Hudson's a little bit easier.
Yeah.
It's amazing what a few years does,
right?
In cars.
Yeah, we're just talking about that yesterday on the Ask Gas. Just like how much time so much development in such a short amount of time. And it's just,
industry
took off.
You know, watching. Amazing. Yeah, watching them race cars back in the day, you're like, holy cow. And then like a few years later, it's like, why didn't they do that?
I know, right?
Then, right?
Yeah, because no one had ever done it before, but they're, racing on tires this thin, no helmet, open cockpit. Yeah, craziness.
Racing's fun.
Have you ever had the chance to drive like a vintage stock car or any other sort of vintage race car like that?
So I've driven a lot of, I would say, different forms of stock cars because when I came in the sport in 2008, it was still the old steel body cars. And, you know, so I would say I've driven probably four or five different versions of, you know, kind of the NASCAR, you know, version of stock cars.
Was there one that stood out as being like the sketchiest or like the most wild?
So our current car, when we first started, it was pretty sketchy. And I think it's because we were all trying to figure out, you know, on the setup side, they were trying to figure out how to push the limits on setups and things like that. And, you know, you would bottom out a lot and, you know, the ride quality was really bad. And so I would say they were a handful at first. And now I would say they're pretty comfortable to drive. My first, that 2008, 9 and 10, the version of the ARCA cars and the Nationwide Series cars back then, they were kind of like the wedge body, like kind of really kind of low and narrow in the front. And those were the cars where like everything was fine. And then all of a sudden, like I mentioned earlier, like if you stepped over the line, it was really hard to come back from. And like, it didn't have a lot of side force on the car. And so like when it did get sideways, you didn't really have a lot of air to hold, if you look at race cars, if you could build them any way you wanted, like the old, like when NASCAR, you know, bodybuilders would build their own cars. If you looked at it from overhead, it would look like a banana. Like the right front fender was to the right, and then it would kind of like be like a little boomerang, and then all of a sudden the right rear would be further out to the right. And that was just to catch all the air. You know, when you're going through the corner, the car would, you know, slide to the right, and now all of a sudden you're getting a lot of air on the right side. And so you could kind of feel the air and kind of get your car a little bit, you know, yawed out to the side and get through the corner. But then now the cars are more symmetrical. And, you know, if you look at it either side, they're identical. And so that's helped us be a little bit, I guess, more mainstream on like the road courses and stuff. And the cars look closer to, you know, the street cars that they have out these days, which is something that the OEMs wanted, you know, in our sport, to get, you know, more connection with like the actual street cars. But, yeah, if our builders, had their hand and be able to do whatever they wanted, they would not look like that.
Yeah.
So this was the first time that you've raced at the Autodromo in Mexico City, or have you done it before?
No, this is the first time.
How did you feel like you navigated it?
Felt good. So Chevy has a simulator that I was able to spend a couple of hours in, Monday night before race week. And, so I felt like I got the course down, you know, pretty well. And then, yeah, just go out and make laps. I mean, all the road courses are really, you know, somewhat similar. I mean, it's especially when they don't have elevation, like it's flat, right? So it's not like a Watkins Glen or Sonoma, or even a Coda, but like it raced similar to a Coda as far as, you know, you had some long straightaways, you know, some hard braking zones at the end of those straightaways. And then, you know, the stadium section was the slowest, you know, section that I would say we have, in our NASCAR Cup Series races, but it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be as far as like tightness goes. You know, we still raced through there pretty well. The rain, you know, threw some things there that were really fun and challenging. I felt like we were really good in the rain. I would say the S's, they didn't flow as good as I thought, you know, normal S's do. It's like you would kind of string two corners together and then you would almost reset, you know, for a couple of corners. But I would say the hardest part was like the spotters. They were so far away and there were so many buildings in between. Yeah. Oh, like the spotters couldn't talk to each other. I could hear them, you know, when I was in front of them, but like they were all confused at really what was going on. Like when we got spun, nobody really saw it. They had no idea for about five or six laps what happened. Wow. But it was cool because like that last long green flag run, the tires wore out a lot. So you got a lot of marbles offline. And that generally doesn't happen a lot in our sport anymore. Like us drivers always push Goodyear to keep making softer tires that wear out because, you know, then car control comes in, setup comes in for, you know, when, if you have your car set up where you can go fast, but still take care of your tires, then it shows up at the end of the races.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah.
So I mean,
that's part of your skill set, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so I thought I thought that was a really cool aspect of that race that we haven't had in a while. So I'm looking forward to going to the other road courses. Now that last run, I definitely would have done something different because like we didn't really see that tire wear throughout practice or throughout the first part of the race because we had rain. So we had rain tires on, we were back and forth and that was our longest run that we had had. And so we thought fall off was mainly because of the heat in the tires, you know, but it was actually, you know, actually wearing the tire out. So I pushed really hard early that last run and probably wore out my tires too much because, you know, there at the end, I was just hanging on.
Yeah. What's that? What's going through your head when you know your tires are just done, but you have to just make it to the end? Like, are you just purely defensive at that moment? Or like even, do you have to like keep yourself in check and not panic?
Yeah. Like you look at the lap times you're running and you start panicking a little bit. But then you got to look around that everybody else is right there with you, right?
Yeah.
And you can see what they're struggling with. So, you know, for me, you know, at that point, you're using different gears. You're shifting different. So like turn five there, you know, your braking points are generally the same because you're not going as fast as what you would on new tires. So you don't really change your braking markers a whole lot. But, you know, for me, it was like turn five. When I was, you know, really good, I was in first gear, but then, for, you know, five and six and seven, then, you know, I started leaving it in second gear. So I had less wheel spin, you know, when I would go to the gas and things like that. So you got to do little things different. You end up having to slow your mid corner speed down because your front doesn't turn as good as what you need it to. And then therefore you do have to worry about kind of lock up a little bit.
Does your team have like real-time telemetry and they're able to like relay that to you?
So we do have that and we haven't always had that. Over again, you know, kind of like we talked about, it's like things evolve. And so like for me, you know, they have it real time, but you know, for me, like a race weekend, like I'll practice and then I'll get out of the car and I'm looking at all the data. Like I can look at the lap times and say, okay, this car is the fastest early in the run. This car is the fastest late in the run. And I can compare everything that I'm doing, the brake, the throttle, the steering, RPMs, and you know, what gears they're in, and then like the mile per hour. And so I can lay them over top of each other. I can see if they're running the bottom or their top, like on an oval, you know, a road course, like, you know, we were at in Mexico City. You know, where are they braking? What gears are they running through which corners? Cause there were, you know, different gears that you could run depending on how your car handled. Like I felt like a lot of the Chevys needed to downshift to first in a few of the corners. Some of the other manufacturers left it in second. You know, but you would have a Chevy and another manufacturer right on top of each other in speed. It's like, you know, there's more than, you know, one way to skin the cat, for sure.
The team's allowed to like tell or give you strategy and tactics based
while
on
out there,
while you're out there.
Yeah.
Okay. Cause yeah. There's a few years there in F1 when the teams were not allowed to do that. And I always thought that was so stupid. It's like, what's the point of having all this information?
Yeah.
If you can't tell your driver what to do,
you know, like Michigan practice, for example, it's a track where, you know, during practice, you're not lifting a whole lot. You're not really using brake pressure at all, but, you kind of roll out of the throttle, let your car turn. And so my guys were like, you know, we're out there running. They're like, I think your entry speed's a little too fast. And so if you could get your entry speed down like a mile or two an hour, then I think your car will turn. You should be able to get to the gas sooner. And then so, you know, as I'm out there running, I start making those adjustments and they're like, oh yeah, that's it. Like your speed's good down the backstretch. You know, I can tell them what it does to the car and then my engineers can make adjustments, you know, based off of that information. It's like, all right, he's lifting to get the, you know, the front of the car to set, you know, kind of settle into the track to turn. But yeah, they can give me that info all the time.
That's crazy that it's down to 1 mile per hour that they can be like, this might fix it. And then it does.
It does. It's wild. Yeah. And you see that a lot on the road courses. You know, it's like, you know, because we do have corners that are so slow. And so, you know, turn 14 at Mexico City, like you're coming onto the long straightaway. And so like you want to try and carry as much speed through there as possible. Well, you know, I was going through there and again, if I was a mile an hour too fast, then it didn't want to turn as good. So then like I got through the center faster, but I couldn't get the power down on exit, you know, as good. So then like at the end of the front straightaway down in turn one, you know, I wasn't going as fast as I would. If I would have slowed up the center of the corner, you know, a half mile an hour, a mile an hour, and turned a little bit better and got straighter on exit, then all of a sudden I'm faster at the end of the front straightaway. So a lot of give and take.
Yeah. On these road courses, are there any kind of like weird artifacts that you make a mental note about where there's like a manhole cover that you avoid or like a weird bump in the road or something like that?
So a lot of people do like track walks, you know, you see that a lot in like IndyCar and F1 and guys are starting to do it in our sport. I have a hard time with track walks, like, cause they look so different when you're just walking the track versus when you're in your car going at speed. You know, but I feel like the line's the line on road courses. You know, I mean, there's a couple things that you can do different. You know, like turn 8 at Mexico City, if you walk it, you can tell like the further you get out to the left on entry, it's kind of off camber. So like in the simulator when I was running it, I kind of saw that a little bit, but you know, you could feel it and get loose or, you know, whatever. Well, then, you know, when you walk the track, you're like, okay, yeah, it's definitely, you know, like that here. But for me, I like to just get in the car and start making laps. But yeah, I mean, you make notes and then, you know, I got notes in my phone of, you know, mainly like braking markers. You know, it's like, all right, turn one at Mexico City, where the grass ends and the, you know, kind of the curb and the concrete start, you'll start braking right here for turn one. And then, you know, turn four, you're like right past the bridge. You know, I start braking here or, you know, the light over here, you know, there's always these different little things that you're looking for.
You probably have a really good memory then.
That's how I got through school. I just memorized everything. And, yeah, I,
I didn't learn shit.
That's exactly right. I made great grades, but as soon as the test was over, yeah, that was about it.
It's just out of your brain.
Yeah. But now when it comes to sprint cars and stock cars and just racing in general, I feel like that's what I use my knowledge for.
That's awesome. We are running out of time, Ricky. Thank you so much for being on this podcast. You're about to hop into our IROC Z, the NOS Energy IROC Z. Yes. Like, how are you feeling about this?
I'm excited to see it. I've never driven an IROC Z, so I'm looking forward to that as well. You know, like I mentioned to y'all, driving my parents' 85 yeah. SS Monte Carlo, probably a little more aggressive than dad probably knew I did at times. I'm anxious to kind of see how similar it is. Obviously, kind of the same years and
same years, but man, we it's all UMI suspension underneath. It's got weight jack suspension, big brakes, a little spoiler on the back. It's more power. That's right, centrifugal supercharger on there. Really excited to get out there and test it out.
Put the NOS tune on it, so that's good. Right.
Yeah. And it's really cool. Again, NOS Energy is giving this car away, so keep an eye out for that sweepstakes. You could be behind the wheel of this car as well. Ricky, where can people find you on social media?
I'm at Stenhouse Jr. Across the board. So yeah, it's I keep it simple.
Keep it simple. Nice. That's awesome. Yeah. Make sure you follow Ricky there. Follow Joe at Joe G Weber. Follow me at Nolan J Sykes. Big thanks to our crew, Edgar and Audrey, behind the camera there. And thank you again for listening. Ricky, thank you so much for coming on the Big Three, man.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And we'll see you next week.